Hey, this is Peter Biello, host of The Bookshelf from NHPR. And if you like this podcast, you will also like NHPR's 10-Minute Writers Workshop. In each episode, NHPR's Virginia Prescott speaks with authors about their process, their bad habits, and their best advice for aspiring writers. So even if you are not a writer, it is fascinating to hear how today's notable authors get their work done. Really, really inspiring if you are a writer. Interesting, even if you aren't. So subscribe to the 10-Minute Writers Workshop on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. Okay, onto the bookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. In her new collection, poet Alice Fogel makes a house come alive. It can fly, it can support, it can contain, it can expand, and it can serve as a sort of proving ground or cradle for a long relationship. The collection, called A Doubtful House, is a lyric exploration of identity and living space and how the two connect. And Alice Fogel joins me now to talk about A Doubtful House. Welcome.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Let's start with a reading of one of these poems. Okay. I've been reading them in silence, and I've been wondering how they sound. So could you read Walls for us?
Yes, and I will just say before I start that it's hard to read them out loud because they don't have any punctuation, and the phrasing is meant to overlap. So when I read it out loud, you might hear some of that, and I might have to destroy some of the overlapping by how I pronounce the phrasing.
Well, I'm interested in hearing how
All
it comes
out. So here we go. This is House of Walls. Go ahead, expose the beams. Try the open concept subdued by love seats, islands, and throw rugs. But please, don't complain about the walls, each sheetrocked one once plastered by a different hand in a different subtle design, stripe, swirl, half moon, wave. Hello to each fingerprint of someone like you have these slogans, tear down the walls, don't put up walls that offend the house, wants you to know you misunderstand walls, our boundaries. Everyone needs some civilizing factor, some structure to hide behind, to hold up. The stories and the roof have a little backbone, i.e. a wall. Has windows and doors. Maybe you should talk more about doors, deceptive ones like pocket doors, submissive folding doors, fussy latches, defensive locks, and nervous keys. What about knobs? Let's talk about knobs, not walls, because who controls you, not the walls? Identify and organize yours from yours, inside from outside. In here, over there, compartmentalize like parts of your brains, areas where to be together or not are natural options to balance individual taste and framing and paint colors, places for your things thrown or dropped, yours hung or shelved. We all feel a little vulnerable, sometimes need a little personal space, and boundaries are not endings, but definitions to rest within, lean against, pass through. Remember those knobs? Retreat back through. Now, houselings, square up this wall between you and the walls with how you love suspense, a tease, a glimpse around a corner, the angles you step into and out of, shadow and light, hour by hour, freed through doorways, waiting or moving down the halls. You know those times when you sit in a room and it's nice, the house tucked around you like a vow? How could you without walls?
This is just one of many examples of how a part of a house becomes almost personified. It becomes a character in itself. It has a role. And then, of course, there are words like, you know, fussy, defensive, nervous. These are things that people can become.
Uh-huh.
So I was wondering how you managed to deconstruct a house like that and then reconstruct it almost as a person.
In most of my books and most of my writing, I do everything I can to avoid using the word I and meaning the word I. I think the word I is in this book once, and it's in quotes because it's the house referring to itself. So in this book, I was taking the house as my alter ego and letting the house talk to its inhabitants. It talks to all its inhabitants as you. So that's why I might say you and you. It's not in the first person, the house, but it's from the house's point of view, looking at the people in it, saying, come on, people, what are you doing? And caring about the people. It actually became really fun as a project to go around the house and look at how many things are in a house that are symbolic or could represent things, you know, the cracks in the floorboards or our associations, the kitchen sink, the attic, the basement.
The things in the house, the tchotchkes you go out and gather as proof of having once not been inside the house,
right,
and then laying them all over the house.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And some of the lines when you exploring little bits of life inside the house, like the closet line, for example, in the poem about the closet, you know, if you want to know the truth of who you are, then open up the door to that closet. Mm-hmm. I mean, that works for me on so many levels.
It was really actually pretty easy to use the house in such a way where it was becoming representative of all those aspects of humans and relationships.
There are two humans sort of in the poem. There is no I. For the most part, there's no I. But there are hints that there's a relationship involved, and there's a relationship evolving. And for me, you know, the book makes me think about relationships. Who is the individual that's part of a pair? And that one line in that first poem that you just read for us, boundaries are not endings but definitions to rest within. It really spoke to, I guess, the need to maintain some kind of individuality when you are in a very close relationship, especially over so many years.
Right. That's, I think, any long-term commitment, you really have to examine where the boundaries are and where you're willing to go. So that's what I was doing with the syntax as well. And the layout on the page is, you know, our radio listeners cannot see. The way that the poems look on the page is that they line up on both margins, like two sides of a room. And the lines reach towards each other from the two sides and sometimes overlap and sometimes pull away from each other. So visually, it's doing what happens in a long-term relationship. And also syntactically, because I'm overlapping. Sometimes we finish each other's sentences. Sometimes we just leave sentences hanging. So I'm overlapping in those ways, too, trying to orally, A-U-R, orally mimic what happens in relationships.
Mm-hmm. There are some times where it's really dense, where it moves very quickly, and then there are other times where it slows down quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to the Walls poem, the overlapping is something that as you read them, you really have to take a moment to get your mind around. We've got a line like some civilizing factor, some structure to hide behind, to hold up, and then to hold up the stories in the roof, have a little backbone. The stories in the roof have a little backbone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a merger across those two sides pulling towards the other.
Oh, that's really great. I'm really enjoying your reading of this. And so you're seeing that there's so many different ways you can read a phrase. It can finish the last phrase into a sentence. It could start a new one, or it could be something on its own. And so there's definitely a lot of recursivity you have to do, as if that's a word, to keep going back through and saying, wait, what was that? And how did I read that? And what was that saying?
Which is something you do in relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did they say just then? What did they mean by that?
Right. What are the different ways I could interpret that, and why?
So what do you hope readers or listeners take away from these poems?
I hope that a lot of people can find themselves in the poems in thinking about all the different ways of how they relate in, you know, in relationships and the overlap of identity and trying to maintain oneself while giving oneself and receiving another. And I also hope that they just really enjoy the play of language and what language and syntax can do on a page or in our ears, in our minds.
Well, Alice Fogel, thank you very much for coming in and speaking about A Doubtful House.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's Alice Fogel. She's New Hampshire's Poet Laureate, and her latest book out this month is called A Doubtful House. Alice has been on the bookshelf before, and you can find a link to her list of her top five reading recommendations at our website, nhpr.org. And since April is National Poetry Month, it's probably a good time to ask you for your poetry reading recommendations. So tell us what poets or poetry collections we should check out. Our email address is books@nhpr.org. You can also tweet us at @nhprbookshelf. And hey, Alice Fogel is going to be on another one of NHPR's podcasts. It's the 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, which features conversations with authors about how they create their literary masterpieces. You can find the 10-Minute Writer's Workshop and the bookshelf from NHPR wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, recommend these podcasts to your fans and followers on social media using the hashtag TryPod. That's TryPod. It's a great way to help your fellow audiophiles discover great new podcasts. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.